Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Joss, and this is Reading Women, a podcast inviting you to reclaim the bookshelf and read the world. Today, I'm talking to Zakiya Dalila Harris about her latest book, The Other Black Girl, which is out now from Atria Books. You can find a complete transcript of this episode on our website, readingwomenpodcast.com, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. So I got my start in the book world at a very young age when I was a little kid, reading mysteries and elementary school thrillers. And I was beyond excited for The Other Black Girl when I heard about it, because there are so few thrillers that I found as a young child and even making my way into the book world in 2015 that were written by Black women and other authors of color. The Other Black Girl, like Zakiya talks about in our interview today, is about Nella, who works at Wagner Books, and she is one of the only Black people that work in her building and the only Black person that works at Wagner in the position that she's in. There's another woman who comes in, Hazel, who is another Black woman, and Nella has a whole lot of feelings about this, and then the book kind of spirals from there. It absolutely delivered on every single note and point that I was hoping. And in our interview today, Zakiya and I talked about the different power structures that exist at Wagner Books, which is this publishing house that they both work at, and how the white higher-ups in powerful positions put this pressure and different microaggressions on both Nella and Hazel, and how they interact with one another and how those dynamics play into the thriller portion of the book. Again, talking about the mysterious portion, there is also these notes that Nella starts to receive in almost kind of like a Pretty Little Liars manner from an anonymous source that are really very terrifying and adds a whole nother level of terror to that aspect of the book. It is so incredibly propulsive, and as someone who enjoys that incredibly page-turning quality, I really could not put this book down. And once I reached maybe about the 50 or 60% point and there is this kind of genre twist, I was absolutely hooked and could not stop reading, and I don't think you will be able to either. During our conversation, Zakiya and I also talked about her own experience being an editorial assistant and then moving up to being an assistant editor for maybe about half a year in publishing, and how that influenced her own writing and moving into the writing sphere. We also discussed different relationship dynamics of Nella's, such as her best friend Malaika, who is another Black woman, as well as her partner Owen, who was a white man, and how those relationship dynamics play into the plot and her character development, as well as the different locations in the book, such as different parts of New York State, the city of Boston, the state of Connecticut, and also a character who is originally from the Dominican Republic. And of course, I obviously wanted to talk to her about the structure of her book, which includes four parts, multiple perspectives, a plot twist, a genre twist. I was so here for it. And we had such an amazing and in-depth conversation about all of this. But before I guess we get into that, I should let you know a little bit more about Zakiya. So Zakiya Dalila Harris spent nearly 3 years in editorial at Knopf and Doubleday before leaving to write her debut novel, The Other Black Girl. And prior to working in publishing, Zakiya received her MFA in creative writing from the New School. Her essays and book reviews have appeared in Cosmopolitan, Guernica, and The Rumpus, and she lives in Brooklyn. With all that being said, I am so delighted to have Zakiya Dalila-Harris here on the Reading Women podcast. And without further ado, here is our conversation. Hi, Zakiya. Thank you so much for being here and welcome to the Reading Women podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
We are so excited to have you here. Congratulations on the release of The Other Black Girl.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a whirlwind of wonderful surprises these last few months.
I am so, so glad to hear that. And also so excited to read your book. Honestly, it was one of my most anticipated releases, and I was so happy to have a copy in my hands. I was just wondering if you could give our listeners a brief synopsis of your book.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book mostly follows a young woman named Nella Rogers. She has been the only Black person working at Wagner Books, a very prestigious and many might say stuffy publishing house in the heart of Manhattan in New York City. And since she's been the only Black person there, she, you know, has to deal with a lot of microaggressions from her white coworkers, has to deal with speaking for all of the Black people on the planet, until Hazel, another young Black woman, shows up in the office. And Nella thinks, okay, we have a lot in common. We can maybe form a sisterhood, talk about black hair, Black music, all of those things. But that does not happen necessarily. I won't get too much into it. But over the course of the novel, we see strange things happening at work to Nella, and she starts to wonder about Hazel's true intentions at Wagner. And also unfolding alongside Nella's story are the stories of three other Black women who are all also tied to the world of publishing. And all four of these women are bound to this very sinister, dark secret that has implications for Black people all over the world.
Oh my gosh, love to hear it. This has so many elements that I absolutely need in a book. This was definitely a big need for me this year. I also heard that you have experience and background in publishing, and there was a very faded story about how this came about in the women's restroom. So I was just curious, number one, yes. What is your experience and background in publishing, and how did you move into writing, and how did this come about?
Yeah. So I worked in book publishing for 2.5-3 years and enjoyed a lot of aspects of it. I've always wanted to be a writer, but also as I got a little older, I got really interested in editing. I did my MFA at the New School in nonfiction writing. So I'd gotten really used to talking about writing and literature and all of those kinds of things. So when I got the job in publishing, I was super excited because it's super hard to get in through those doors. And so I enjoyed a lot of parts of it, but of course, like Nella, I was one of very few, in my case, not the only Black person, but the only Black woman, only Black full-time person working in editorial at the time. So the moment you mentioned the bathroom, at this point, when I had this encounter, I had been working in publishing for a little more than 2 years, and I was starting to know that this wasn't for me, because I did want to pursue my writing career. And that idea really solidified in me when I was washing my hands in the bathroom and another Black woman came out of the bathroom stall and started washing her hands as well. And I saw her and thought, oh my God, where are you? Where are you coming from? Like, I know all of the Black people within like the next two floors up and down, you know, and I had this moment where, you know, I thought maybe we could have some kind of conversation, like we're both in this space. How cool is that? But nothing happened. I am kind of shy, but I do think I was like giving off some signals. I went back to my desk and thought about that interaction or lack of an interaction, and was like, oh, of course, you know, I wanted this because I've been the only one for so long. And I often tune that part out of me because it's a lot to think about that every single day. But I did go back to my desk and I started writing chapter one, in which Nella is sitting in her cubicle, smelling these smells. I wrote that sitting in my cubicle, I think maybe even on my like workplace stationery, now that I think about it.
I love this story so much. I feel like there are always memes and graphics that are like, the best ideas come to us in the shower when we're doing our shower thinking. I'm so glad yes. that there was this restroom thinking for you, and also the fated meeting of this other Black woman that works in your building.
I know. It's funny too, because I wonder, like, what if we had had a conversation? Like, would I have still written this book? Like, what if I hadn't had to pee? You know, just like that, like Back to the Future kind of like thread of thinking. But yeah, and it really just having that moment of being with this other Black woman in the bathroom and thinking about community, but then also kind of my own anxieties of like, does she want to be a part? Like, does she want to have this conversation right now? Does she want to do this? Those are all things that went into Nella and Hazel's dynamic in the book.
Oh my gosh, I see so much of that, you know, in some of Nella's thought processes, and obviously we can get more into that later, but just think, you know, your book could have been even more meta than it already is had you started talking to her in the bathroom.
Yes.
I love it. Speaking of which, kind of just in the writing process, how did you navigate, I guess, that super meta aspect of, I guess, first working in publishing, now being a writer, being published, and then writing about working in publishing? How does that work for you?
It is, it's so weird. Like, it's all just so weird thinking about it, how meta it really is, because, I mean, I had written this book before the year we had last year, too. And then when all of the things were happening of, you know, me trying to figure out how I was going to edit my book during like a world, the world just combusting, watching the news, of course, seeing what happened to Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and then trying to be creative. It reminded me a lot of Nella trying to, you know, process the news, the police shootings, and then go to work and show up with a smile. And it was really interesting to navigate that and then have conversations about that. But I'm hoping it's ultimately helpful for me processing all of it. And I also have a therapist, I should say, now. So really figuring that out too, because I'm not used to being a public person. That was not part of my plan necessarily, although I guess that is what comes from being an author, but it's not something I'd thought about as much. And now that I'm on the other side, it is something I'm mindful of and want to make sure that I am taking care of myself. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I feel like we see this a lot in the book with Nella. You know, there's this frustration underneath maybe the entire thing where she's trying to show up and be the editorial assistant to Vera and all the authors there, and being amenable and agreeable while also trying to make radical change in her workplace. And it really feels like such an uphill battle being a Black editorial assistant in mostly white space. And that frustration is so palpable. What are a few defining moments in the book that kind of encapsulate this for you?
Oh, I mean, the one with, I won't give away too many spoilers, but the scene with Colin.
Oh, yes, Colin.
In which, for listeners, I'll just say Nella has to navigate, and this happens pretty early on, Nella has to navigate a very uncomfortable conversation with one of her white authors who has written a Black character that, for Nella, does not ring true. And she has to figure out how to tell them, and her boss, and this should say also, this author is like a best-selling, keeps the lights on author at the place where she works. So there are all of these stakes of her having to navigate that and feeling like she doesn't want to come off as the, you know, angry Black woman, the Black woman who's too sensitive, but then also wants to keep her integrity intact and doesn't want to be that Black person that, you know, Twitter is decrying for letting this slip by. So that's one moment. And yeah, I mean, a couple other instances happen throughout the book that are not as blatant, that are more subtle microaggressions of having her name be gotten wrong, or of, you know, being mistaken for someone else. All of those things, I feel like are these kind of little microaggressions and that actually build up and cause so much frustration, and her trying to just be and be good at her job, but also wanting to speak up. And there's just a lot to balance there.
And we'll be back with more from this episode of Reading Women after a word from our sponsor. The sponsor of this episode is Mubi, a curated streaming service showing exceptional films from around the globe. Every day, Mubi premieres a new film. From iconic directors to emerging talents, there's always something new to discover. With Mubi, each and every film is hand-selected, and it's like your own personal film festival, streaming anytime, anywhere. The thing I love most about Mubi is how they give me access to films from around the world from the comfort of my own living room. I don't have a cinema that plays films like this around where I live, and I am able to watch films from Turkey, Germany, Mexico, Japan, just by logging into Mubi, and they're all there at my fingertips. So I'm in the US, but Mubi is available in 195 countries, so wherever you are, there's always going to be something for you. You can try Mubi free for 30 days at mubi.com/readingwomen. That's mubi.com/readingwomen for a whole month of great cinema for free. Thanks so much to Mubi for sponsoring this episode of Reading Women.
And, you know, when Hazel comes in and it's that frustration becomes even larger when it seems like Hazel's making all of these changes so quickly that Nella was working so hard to make, but really getting nowhere. What do you think that was like really like for Nella? Maybe obviously read the book, please, everyone. But like, if you could just sum that up, what was that like for Nella? Just seeing all these changes maybe being made at a way quicker speed than she was experiencing herself.
Yeah, I mean, it's really frustrating on one hand, especially because Nella's been there for so long and she's like, oh, I've been saying these things. I've been playing your game, and your game meaning she's been really careful and calculated about how she moves throughout Wagner, how she responds to the microaggressions, thinking that she was kind of endearing herself to them and being like the, she doesn't say this, but the good Black person, whatever that means, but being okay and going with the flow is such a big part of her. So for Hazel to come in and suddenly be this whole other kind of Blackness, because I should also say that, like, I was really intentional about the ways that I depicted their kinds of Blackness, because I do think that in publishing and beyond publishing, people are constantly kind of labeling different kinds of Black people, and sometimes even commodifying certain kinds depending on what's happening in the news. And Hazel is this kind of branded, new, bold Blackness that Wagner Books is suddenly very interested in for various reasons. And so for Nella to see them really falling for Hazel and having these kind of, you know, conversations that she's been trying to push for this entire time, she feels really frustrated. But then on top of that, she feels frustrated that she feels frustrated, because why should it matter who is causing these changes, right? Like, if they're happening, that's great. If they're having more diversity meetings because Hazel has found a way to make that happen, that should be a good thing overall for the entire movement of having more diversity in publishing. But it also still makes her feel a way, because she's kind of like, wait a minute, like, what, am I chopped liver? Like, I don't know if people say that anymore, but that phrase, but
I feel like I just heard that saying. This is so off topic, but I was watching the reunion of Love is Blind on Netflix the other day. And
I just started watching that last night.
So good. So much drama. But so I think good. Someone said that when I was watching it in my 2 a.m. Nightly procrastination, revenge procrastination episode, not wanting to go to bed. But I definitely have heard that recently.
That's so funny. Wait, I'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Gosh, please do. Now, you're never going to forget it. It'll be the most memorable part of the show now.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Anyways, but what you were talking about really brings up maybe one of the quotes that really struck me. I just have a list of quotes here that were just really striking to me in the book. And it says, "We don't need to see each other as competition. We already have enough stress being two young Black women in a crazy white environment." And I think that really reminds me of that juxtaposition that you brought up between, I guess, the quote unquote good Black person versus like this new other Black person that's appeared at Wagner Books. And
yeah,
you know, definitely. I'm so curious. The structure at Wagner, there is these powerful white folks, like you said. A really good example is Colin, who is this keeps the lights on type of white man author. How does that structure maybe contribute to these feelings that both Nella and Hazel are having coming in here?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good question. And I think that the answer to that is really also the answer to why these workplaces are not as diverse as they should be. And a lot of that comes from just this idea of, well, first of all, like, you should be lucky to be here, period, that kind of thing. There's definitely an elitism within publishing and a lot of industries like it that have, you know, were built during a certain time when other values were more important. I think publishing was built on one kind of institution that doesn't necessarily give space to people who think differently, and not just Black people. I think a lot of different kinds of thinkers too often get kind of moved to the wayside. I mean, depending on what imprint, because every imprint's different. But I definitely think there's this old-fashionedness there. And then there's also this kind of lack of transparency between the people who are at the top and the people who are not at the top. There's this kind of controlling of information and kind of this control of what is valuable too. I mean, I just remember working in publishing and even the ways in which conversations happened around books that we're getting submitted of, you know, who's the audience for this? These kind of questions that are important, but also depending on how they come about and who they're about, what kind of books they're about, they still are kind of setting the tone for how everyone else is going to respond, because everyone kind of wants to align themselves oftentimes with the person in charge. That's just natural for workplaces. I think a lot of it has to do with all of those things. All of those things cause this lack of desire to want to speak up, because Nella does feel like it's so hard to get where she is. She is the only one there. She has this responsibility to kind of, again, go with the flow in the hopes that she can bring someone else into the workplace, another person of color, and make it more inclusive down the line. So there is that pressure and that hope, but she can only do so much as an entry-level employee and an assistant.
I think a scene that really reminds me of is when Vera first sends the new manuscript to Hazel, and Nella does not receive it in her inbox. So then Nella then has to try and figure out, like, number one, what is the meaning behind this, right? Like, why did Vera not send this to me, and why did she send it to Hazel? And also having to try and figure out, like, do I get my hands on this manuscript? Like, what does this mean for me as an editorial assistant and my standing at the company? And I just feel like that really reminded me of that particular scene and really describing how much these white higher ups really just kind of hold the keys to their job, which is really sad and so complex, even just that thought process that she has to go through that maybe some of these white folks don't have to.
Yeah. And there's also always this layer of, you know, am I being paranoid? I mean, this is something I think of all the time in terms of like emails. I mean, I do think now that that's most of my communication with the world. I've gotten a lot less like, I can't overthink everything anymore like I used to. But I do remember working in publishing and worrying like, oh, should I put an exclamation point here? Should I word this a certain way so it comes off a certain way? And there was this added layer of, I am the Black person here. I'm the only Black person, Black editorial assistant here. I do need to kind of set this example for other people in the hopes that they will be able to get hired here as well. I mean, of course, that's not how it works, but I do feel that way. And I know a lot of other people of color feel that way as well when they are the only one. And then when they're not the only one, they're often being compared to that other person too. So it's like, you just can't win.
You know, totally. And, you know, in the book, there was this other scene where Hazel and Nella are kind of talking about code switching, and obviously no spoilers behind that whole conversation. But, you know, did you find that code switching and, like you said, figuring out whether to put an exclamation mark here or a period here, and obviously interlaced with race, power, you know, who holds the keys to your job? Do you find that the inclination to do that and to be amenable and agreeable and, I guess, quote unquote, nice, does that decrease at all as maybe she moved to being an editorial assistant to an assistant editor?
For myself or?
You know, either. either yeah. you or no.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that with power comes an increased amount of power, because it's still, I mean, I had been promoted to be an assistant editor from an editorial assistant, which for me personally was really cool, because it meant that my bosses trusted me and wanted me to take on this role and knew I'd be able to speak with authors. And I think being trusted in would have made me, I mean, I only stayed about, I think, 6 months after that, but I know it would have made me a little more confident in terms of my abilities. But I still think that imposter syndrome is present no matter what, even as you kind of get to the top tier, because I do still think the fact that there are so few people in certain industries, I do feel like that would still be something that would show even the most powerful person at the top, if they were a person of color at the top, that there's still so much work that needs to be done. And maybe they're just the exception, right? Which is something else that can also be a weight to carry around, like feeling like you're the only one who is able to get there. So there must be something just really special about you. And that kind of that definitely messes with your head.
That definitely brings maybe another even layer into this. Like we talked about before, you know, there's kind of balancing being the desire to, as an editorial assistant, be the good Black person at the company versus, you know, this other new Black person at the company. And then also having to deal with like exceptionalism, right? Like, and making your way to the top. I did want to switch gears a little bit here, because I'm so curious about the addition of Nella's friend Malaika, which is a very different sort of interaction that she has with another Black woman in the book. And their relationship dynamics, and maybe how that differs from the workplace relationship dynamics with Hazel.
Yeah. Malaika was, for me, a comedic relief and just like very, very fun and soothing to write, because Nella's world at Wagner Books is stifling. It can be oppressive. It can be heavy. And so I had a lot of fun taking her out of the workplace and showing who she could be if she were allowed to be more comfortable with, or if she were allowed to be herself, and if she felt more comfortable being herself at Wagner. And that's also what Hazel kind of could be, right? Like, she could have that relationship with Hazel, and that's why she's so excited when Hazel shows up, because she knows what it's like to have that Black best friend who, you know, tells her to speak up, tells her to be strong, makes these jokes that are sometimes like, ooh, a little cringy. Like, she is not shy, and I really enjoyed getting to do that and show her. But also, I hope for readers, it's also a breath of fresh air.
I feel like one of the things that Nella and Malaika talked about in particular that seemed, like you said, so comforting, soothing, even for me to read, like as a reader, not as the author, obviously. But they shared like so many just little pop culture references, things that are maybe a little bit unspoken that don't have to be totally explained outright. And there is totally a comfort to their relationship in terms of that part of it.
Yeah, it was really important for me to have those moments too, because, I mean, that is how I talk to my friends, you know, when my Black friends, especially whenever we're like just hanging out, we talk about Black Twitter, we talk about the latest whatever song by this artist, but then we also have those conversations like Nell and Malaika have about The Gap, about whether or not, you know, shopping there after they made that monkey hoodie and put a Black boy in it, like all those kind of things, those sticky kind of things that people are writing think pieces about all the time, but actually I think lend themselves better to just conversations, because they're even more nuanced, I think, than think pieces. And I think through Nella and Malaika, I really wanted to show just how complex we are, and also show what was at stake for Nella too while she was on her journey through Wagner Books. You know, is it all worth it? Is it worth, well, I'm stumbling close to a spoiler, but I'll leave it at that.
Sounds good. Sounds good. I think another relationship that was so interesting in terms of the dynamics outside of the workplace was Nella's relationship with her partner, Owen, who is a white man, their relationship dynamics. Mm-hmm. And it really struck me, this one line, or I guess I'm paraphrasing here, where I remember you had said, you know, his only job here is to love her and to adore her. And I think that that is maybe similar in some ways to Malaika, but also a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah. Full disclaimer, my fiance is a white man. And so, navigating that kind of space as a Black woman, working through the things that Nella's working through at Wagner Books with Malaika on one hand and then Owen on the other hand, it's just one other space. Owen is this other space of just another way of how she can think of the world. I mean, Owen was raised by two women. He's from the Midwest, and he has such a different outlook on the world than any of Nella's Wagner Books coworkers. So I also wanted to show the nuances in white people too, because I didn't want to make every white person in this book a villain. And I like to think that most of them aren't, because I did want to make them complex, because just limiting them, just making them into this one-dimensional kind of, you know, oh, they just don't get it. That to me isn't as satisfying or as realistic as people being complicated. And it also was just fun to show Nella's anxieties about her Blackness and how it relates to her white partner, because she wants to be this fully realized Black person in a lot of ways, of being up on the lingo and having natural hair, because that's what she didn't have for most of her young life. But she also has a white boyfriend. And how does she reconcile those two things? Like, does that threaten or take away from her Blackness? Of course it doesn't. But Nella is an overthinker, and Nella's also, you know, witnessed how people feel about interracial relationships. And she's constantly thinking about her Blackness. And so Owen was just another way to look at that for me while writing.
Absolutely. And I think that maybe another place where that really comes up for me in terms of their relationship dynamics, and maybe even, again, the comparison to Hazel, is when we meet Hazel's boyfriend, who kind of maybe first appears as maybe kind of like an enigma. You know, he's a little famous, maybe a lot famous, but yes. Could you maybe describe a little bit of that comparison and that juxtaposition with Hazel's boyfriend?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, when Hazel comes in, I mean, I mentioned, I think earlier, Nella has all of these kind of assumptions of who Hazel is, because she kind of figures, well, I've been doing this way. I've been able to get into these white spaces for so long, and I've been comfortable in them, and I know how I am. Every Black person who's also able to get into these spaces must similarly be doing the same thing. And so she assumes that Hazel has a white boyfriend as well, because Nella has a white boyfriend. And then when she learns that, yeah, that Hazel's boyfriend is actually this cool Dominican artist who wears like really cool suits, like it definitely adds to her intrigue that Hazel is with this person who is so well known, but then also envy, because she hasn't had that. She hasn't been with a partner who she could actually really get into those conversations about what it was like to have brown skin, what it's like to move through the world at work, constantly questioning yourself. And she's able to have those conversations with Owen as deeply as they can possibly get, but she knows he will never truly, truly, truly get it. And so knowing that Hazel has someone who does, it definitely makes Nella curious and also feel a little like, huh, how'd you do that? Like, what am I doing differently here?
Gosh, absolutely. And, you know, I think that another piece of this maybe is the distinction between everyone's experiences and their location, you know, whether it's within the state of New York, other places that come up like the city of Boston, the state of Connecticut. Could you maybe speak more as to how mm-hmm. these pieces of the map maybe fit together in people's stories?
Yeah. Well, I was constantly thinking about, I mean, again, to saying earlier, these ideas of branded blackness and how those come to be, but also the ways in which, I mean, blackness looks different in different states as well, in different regions. And so for Boston, in Massachusetts, I have read a lot of things about what it's like to be a Black person in Boston, in New England. I mean, I know Black people who have lived in Boston, and I know that they're not all, I know it's not all the same, but I definitely have heard stories of how difficult it is, of racism, of blatant racism living in Boston. So I definitely wanted to comment on that kind of thing, and but also how there are people who haven't had bad experiences there as Black people. So what does that mean? There can be these two truths at the same time, right? And then with Connecticut, I was born and raised in Connecticut, like my character. And Nella grew up in a suburb of New Haven, which I can say is quite diverse. There are plenty of Black people there, but she grew up in a suburb. So she was mostly around white people. And that influenced a lot of who she became, where she felt comfortable, what she did with her hair, how she relaxed it and straightened it instead of wearing it natural. So all of those things are things that Nella carries around with her. Because I think that's another thing is that I do think, I mean, everybody's different, but I do think we carry around where we're from more than we realize sometimes. I know for me, I have a fondness for Connecticut, for New England myself. And I also know it's definitely impacted the way that I view the world. And then Harlem, in contrast to Connecticut, where Nella's from, Hazel being from Harlem, New York, this kind of, beautiful, culturally rich, Black community in Harlem. She just has an entirely different outlook on life. And Nella thinks about herself in relation to that and kind of always imagines with Hazel, like what her life would have been like if she'd been raised in Harlem too. How would that have changed her life of being around Black people, of seeing natural hair, hopefully at an earlier age, all of those things. And so I really had a lot of fun kind of moving around all of these different cities and regions, because I think a lot of that affects who we are and our conversations about race and politics.
I feel like, you know, not only location, but also time. I think that was coming up for me as you were talking, is that there's a big piece of the book that maybe we haven't discussed a lot here is that there's a portion, yes, of it, yeah, that takes place in around the 1983 time with other Black women that were, I guess, present then, trying to not speak to give spoilers.
Sorry, I made it really hard.
It's the thriller. It's the thriller aspect. You know, we gotta keep the mystery going here.
Yes, definitely.
But what was it like, I guess, maybe doing research and writing about the 1983 storyline as opposed to the more present day storyline?
It was a lot of fun. I went through a phase where I was obsessed with the 80s as a teenager, which is so random.
I love it.
But like, but I also thought it was interesting because the 80s was such a time of, I mean, as someone who was born in 1992, to me, when I think of the 80s, I mean, so many amazing Black works and Black art were coming out in that time. I mean, the first thing I think of is The Cosby Show, which Bill Cosby, won't go into all of that, but the show itself, what it represents and what it represented to the Black community at the time of Claire Huxtable, a lawyer with this family who dresses snazzily and speaks this way, all of those things, I mean, it was revolutionary. And then of course, like Toni Morrison, all of the work she, like, it's just, there's so much. It's such a rich time. So it was really fun to imagine Kendra Ray and Diana, an editor and author respectfully, working on this book together, Burning Heart, because I could imagine something like that coming out in that time. And it also was important to me to have this time jump too, because for Nella, they are such a big part of why she's still at Wagner, why she even chose Wagner. She looks back upon them, because Kendra Ray, of course, edited the book at Wagner Books. She looks back at them in that time as like this kind of glory days of publishing kind of thing. And actually, when I first wrote the book, it was all through Nella's point of view. I didn't have the other voices. And then after that, I was like, well, she doesn't know the whole story. Like, she's romanticizing this. There's no way it would be that easy, right? Because we know that that's never that easy. History often kind of glosses over like the personal sacrifices, the day-to-day sacrifices that people make to get to where we are. And so I went back and I added those sections to really show all the nuances and all the fraught things about their relationship and how they ended up the way they ended up.
I so love that you brought up that, you know, first you wrote the whole book from Nella's perspective. I mean, number one, it's a great segue into my next question.
But also, I knew.
As I was reading, I was so intrigued. You know, there are four parts. There are multiple perspectives. There's a plot twist. There's kind of a genre twist, maybe like 60, 70% of the way through. I'm so intrigued. Where does the structure of the book, where did you start? And what was the journey like to get to its final evolution here in Pokemon terms?
Yes. What a journey that was. It was hard. I'm not going to lie. It was really hard because there was a lot of restructuring happening, because there are so many parts. Like you said, there are so many characters and viewpoints and twists. I wanted to make sure that the reader was getting information at a certain time in the most interesting way possible. And like, if there were a computer where I could calculate that with like each plot point of like, oh, what is that way? Like, I would have gotten that computer, because I really wanted that. And it took a lot of reworking with my agent and my editor to really see like, what is the most effective way to tell this story? And keep the reader still invested even after the twist, because that's another thing, is like, you can have the twist, but then you want to keep people reading too and make them want to know more. And so finding that sweet spot was really hard. And I mean, I know for me, I've always been a reader of stories that switch perspectives and timelines. So I think just having that in the back of my head of knowing writers who had done it, effectively, and I mean, Toni Morrison's the first person that comes to mind. That for me was really useful too. But I think the thing I would add also is like, yeah, writing Nella's story first and knowing all of the facts, even if she didn't know all the facts, that was really crucial to creating the final product.
Absolutely. And, you know, since maybe you brought that up, I'm so curious, since parts of Nella's story maybe resemble parts of your own, you know, how did you keep those separate in your brain as you were writing this?
Yeah, that was pretty tricky too. I think the thing that I did right off the bat that I didn't really think that much about until looking back on it, I think, is writing Nella's sections in third person. I think maybe when I first sat down to write, I thought about doing it in first person, but like, if that thought happened, it was like a breath. Like, I didn't even realize that the thought happened, because the third person just felt so right. I didn't want to be super close. There are tons of details that are specific to mine. And my parents are divorced. I have a white partner, but there are things that are not similar. And a lot of the things that happen at Wagner Books are not things that actually happened to me. So getting that balance was tricky, but making sure that I was writing it not from first person, and also just keeping in mind the specific character and making even a character map where I saw all the things that were different in her. That was really useful too.
Absolutely. There are definitely parts of Nella's story that I'm very grateful did not happen to you in real time. Maybe some of the more horror slash thriller aspects of this going on.
I was going to say.
Oh my gosh. You know, just kind of speaking of that, I love thrillers. I love horror. I love everything kind of in that genre. This is kind of how I started reading, just personally. Fun fact about me, I used to have a BookTube channel and I used to do a series called Thrillers and More Thursday. But maybe just like to contextualize that, I started making videos in 2015. And it was so hard to find thrillers in 2015 written and promoted by any authors of color. You know, a lot of the ones that I would find were self-published on Amazon and I would have to buy them on my Kindle, et cetera, et cetera. I was just wondering, as an author in maybe the contemporary horror thriller sphere, however you would quantify this, do you think that this genre is similar to others in publishing in terms of how they treat Black authors, or do you think there are some differences?
You know, it's hard for me to say because when I was working in publishing, I wasn't where I worked, we weren't necessarily working on thrillers. So I didn't have as much of a kind of sense of what, I mean, I had a general sense of what was happening, but not so much about what was happening in the thriller genre. But I will say, I mean, just in general, I don't feel like books by Black American authors were really getting bought or talked about or as buzzed about as other books. And this is like across the board, unless it was a memoir or a celebrity. I think that the support wasn't as much, but I do think, and I'm not sure if this answers your question, but I do think that there has been just in the last, I mean, since 2015, we've had Get Out, we've had Us, we've had Lovecraft Country, which of course was a book before, but now it's, I mean, a show. I do think actually like visibility of Black people in thrillers has increased, in a lot of ways because of TV and film. And yeah, I mean, now there are so many writers, so many thriller writers, Black thriller writers who I am hearing about, and I'm not sure how much of that is just me being kind of tuned now, of course. And now I'm on Twitter, which I wasn't before, as much, just like S.A. Cosby, Wanda Morris, so many out there. And my hope is that there'll just be more and more.
Absolutely. That totally, again, it's a great segue into my next question. And my next question was, what are some like recommendations would you make for readers who enjoy The Other Black Girl?
Yeah, I mean, I would say Wanda Morris's book, All Her Little Secrets, which isn't coming out till November in the U.S. I'm not sure about abroad yet, but that is such a fun thriller. A young Black woman who is an attorney finds her boss, a white man, dead in his office and runs. that's all I'll say. But it is a page turner. It's very exciting and just fun to see a Black female protagonist in that space. And gosh, my reading these days is not as great. But I mean, for me, actually, this isn't a current book, but Passing by Nella Larsen definitely inspired my characters. It's not a horror movie, but I think it's definitely a social thriller. And it's about two Black women who are both presenting or able to present as white women. And there is drama, there is subtext, there are a lot of things that are unsaid. So I often say that, I mean, Passing definitely influenced me while writing. So I recommend that. Yeah, I know there are a bunch that I'm thinking. I'm looking at my my bookcase right now, but those are a few that stand out to me.
Awesome. Sounds good. I feel like I have an arc of that first book sitting on my shelf. I remember the title and I remember putting it on my TBR. So I was like, oh my gosh, that is so familiar.
You gotta read it. You gotta read it. It's so fun. I also just love like
the cover and the packaging. The packaging, listen to me, publishing person at heart.
The publishing is showing. It's showing. Oh my gosh, amazing. Maybe my last question here before we wrap up is, what is coming next for you?
Yes. Well, I'm working on the TV adaptation of the show with Rashida Jones for Hulu. So that has been a lot of fun and a lot of work learning that world from scratch. So keep an eye out. Hopefully, you know, who knows, timeline, the world, everything is happening at once, but that'll be really fun. And I am also just thinking about my next book, you know, just kind of jotting things down every now and then, playing with ideas, because I am really excited to work on the new thing. It'll feel really great to get back to the thing that kind of started this all.
I am beyond excited for your next book, whenever or whatever that may be. You know, hopefully maybe the next time you visit the restroom, inspiration will strike again and it'll all just happen.
I know. I'll just hang out, you know, at my old job.
Waiting for inspiration to strike, you know,
inspiration.
Someone else to come in with a work badge and maybe another story will bloom.
Yes. I think the universe will deliver this.
We'll put it out there. They call it manifesting, I hear.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, that about wraps it up for today. Thank you so much for being here. I really, really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much. This is so much fun.
And that's our show. I'd like to thank Zakiya Dalila Harris for talking with me about The Other Black Girl, which is out now from Atria Books. You can find her at ZakiyaDalilaHarris.com and on Instagram at ZakiyaDalilaHarris and on Twitter at Zakiya_Harris. Many thanks to our patrons whose support makes this podcast possible. This episode was produced by me, Joss, and edited by Kendra Winchester. Our music is by Miki Saito with Isaac Green. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at The Reading Women. Thank you so much for listening.